Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Yvonne Pierre Show. Hear from people who have overcome obstacles, have inspirational stories to tell, or helpful information to share.
Our child, and we were to take her home. Remarkable advice for that era when many children with Down syndrome were put in institutions.
I was living for today, not caring about tomorrow.
The Yvonne Pierre Show, a variety talk show whose only mission is to empower you.
And I turned around and I remember this 48 years later of when I turned around and I said to her, no, I can do it. That kind of set the tone to her right from the beginning that even though I was in a chair, you know, I was still independent. I was still going to do things.
I believe that everything happens for a reason. We are vessels that have the option to allow God to use us.
Make a choice to break the generational curses on our life.
Thank you for tuning in. Now, here is your host, Yvonne Pierre.
Welcome, and thank you for tuning in. Today we're going to be talking about struggling to learn. One of my biggest challenges, I faced, and one of my deepest secrets throughout my life was reading. Since I was old enough to read, probably, you know, like 2 or 3 years old. And even after high school, reading has been a battle. I remember many teachers would, and you probably remember too, would assign paragraphs to each student in the class. And some teachers would assign based on seating arrangement. And so I would sit there and I would count heads and say, okay, 1, 2, you know, count how many paragraphs and to know which paragraph I needed to study. And I would read it over and over and over until I had it memorized. Then occasionally, if someone ahead of me, maybe 2 chairs or so ahead of me, would read better, the teacher would say, oh, go ahead, read the next paragraph. And that would throw me off, completely off. I've been studying this for the past 20 minutes, and now I have to find me an escape route. I have to find a way to get out of class. So my point is, reading has been one of my greatest challenges, and if somebody would have told me during that time that I would be a straight-A student, working on my MBA at a university, I would have been offended, and I would have thought that they were trying to insult me. So, and if they would have said education would have been on my high list, on the top of the list of my priorities, I wouldn't have believed them. So today's topic, as I said, is struggling to learn, because reading affects learning. And my guest is Dr. Bob Zenhauser. He spent 20 years researching neuropsychology and with a major emphasis on learning disabilities and accumulating in 10-year research program on theory, causes, remediation of reading disability. He received his PhD in 1969 and was an early advocate for computers for individuals with disabilities and K-12 education. He taught neuropsychology research and statistics at St. John University and for 35 years until he retired a full professor in 1998. Currently, Dr. Bob is the CEO of Enabling Support Foundation, a nonprofit with a dual mission to support people with disabilities and K-9 education, as I mentioned earlier. He has a particular interest in empowering individuals in the special education classroom. Enabling Support Foundation provides resources and services to teachers who would like to develop projects for their classes. For more information on ESF, visit www.enabling.org. Welcome.
Hi, Yvonne. It's nice to be here.
Thank you.
Hope your weather there is nice as it is here in New York.
Yeah, it's back and forth. It's kind of it's a little warmer today, but it's been cold.
When I listened to your reading and what you were saying, it fits so much into what my ideas are. We have a strange idea of what reading is.
Yeah.
Reading means to take meaning from the printed word.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow we've equated that with reading out loud.
Yeah.
And there causes so much of the problems that the kids have. We have a unique way of teaching reading. The basic idea we say is you look at the printed word,
uh-huh,
and somehow you sound it out, whether it's a real phonics approach or just simple look-say,
uh-huh,
and from that sound, we know what it means. And that works. For most people, worked for
right.
me. It was the way that I liked it. But there are kids who just cannot make that initial sounding out.
Yeah, and I was one of them.
I could say it. And what were you doing instead? You were basically putting it in your own head without saying it, and then when it came time, you said you memorized it.
Yeah.
Suppose you were allowed something different. Suppose that you were said, okay, look at this paragraph, go over it. Now, in your own words, tell me what it said. That would have been so much easier than a word-for-word rendition where every word, if you said jet instead of plane, it really doesn't matter in the context of what reading is all about. But we are set up so it's very, very precise to do it this particular way, word by word by word.
Yeah.
And parents do that for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Show me you can read. And what they mean is read out loud.
Right.
Okay?
I had no connection to the words. There was no connection to the words.
But you knew what they meant.
Some of them, I kind of struggled with, English didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. It was like, why it had too many rules, and it was like contradiction, and it was a battle for me to understand that there were three different theirs. You know, it was like, why is it, you know, what's the difference in the there? You know, I wasn't connecting with the words. I didn't fully understand what the words meant, and they were simply just words, if that makes sense.
It makes sense, and you're talking about the homonym part of English, which drives everybody crazy. Let's not take a word which is confusing like that, but you said there are too many rules. There
yeah.
are too many phonetic rules. How is this pronounced?
Right.
Okay. But we said getting reading means to get meaning from the printed word.
Uh-huh.
And saying the word is one way to get at that meaning. Because if you can say it, you hear it, you know what it means. But it's not the only way.
Yeah.
But what we have done is to make that word the basis of reading. It's as if the means becomes more important than the end. If you can take a child and if they can take a word and a picture that's the same as that word, if they can pair those two, they know what the word means.
Yeah.
But we don't take that as being able to read. But it is. It is the essence of reading. and sounding out is one means, as I said, to get at it, but it becomes more important than the reading itself. Our standardized tests, the No Child Left Behind stuff,
mm-hmm.
parts of that are phonetic decoding. Can these children decode? Why? Because it is one way to teach reading, but we have made it the only way.
Right.
Our ex-president, Bush,
mm-hmm.
declared that phonics is the American way. All children should be taught by phonics. Bloomberg, our mayor of New York, has said the same thing. Why? I really don't know, but there is such a strong belief on the part of people that phonics is the way to go, that it becomes the only way. Now, it works for some people. It works for a lot of people. It worked for me. But for those people where the look-say or phonetic approach from word to sound to meaning doesn't work, we need different approaches.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that they say is, well, do you want to be like the Chinese where you have to memorize all of these symbols? There's so many of them there. There's so many words in English. Why would you want to take that approach? The simple answer is the Chinese are still here. The Phoenicians who developed the phonetic alphabet are a little tribe in Lebanon. So using the non-phonetic approach worked for the Chinese, and they've been around for a long time. Suppose a child was deaf. Using a phonetic approach would make absolutely no sense.
Correct.
So because of their deficit, we make special exceptions for them.
Mm-hmm.
Now we take the kids that have phonetic decoding issues, and we try and teach them what they can't do. It's like
right.
teaching a deaf child how to hear. You can't do it.
Yeah.
You spend hours and hours and days and weeks frustrating the kids.
Yeah.
Now, in support of that approach, those bright kids who can take the Orton-Gillingham method and stick to it and stick to it and stick to it will ultimately be able to read. But that's a relatively small number of the kids,
mm-hmm.
of the stick-to-itiveness. They are the brighter of the brights, and ultimately they would succeed no matter what we did. But how about the average kids or the slightly below average who could learn to read if we use different approaches?
Yeah. And I didn't realize, too, that even after once I graduated and went off to community college, and now I'm at a university, but I didn't realize that it is a bigger challenge than what a lot of people probably realize. A lot of kids struggle with reading and graduate from high school the average, I think I've heard, is eighth grade reading level.
Well, eighth grade reading level as determined by standardized tests,
mm-hmm.
which have their own problems, but
yeah.
If part of the test is phonetic decoding, it really speaks to, you go around in a circle. They can't do phonetic decoding, therefore they can't read, therefore they can't do phonetic decoding.
Mm-hmm.
But if that is part of the test, it's not fair. Let me give you a very simple thing that you can do with your own kids, if any of the audience out there. I took a group of reading disabled kids from a regular classroom and compared them to the on-grade readers.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave them a task. And the task was to take these two words and ask, did they mean the same thing? So or even compare it with a picture. The effect was the same. So suppose I had the picture of a bone and the word bone. Okay. These kids could make the matches. The kids that we call reading disabled could make the matches as well as the on-grade readers. But now I took these same words and paired them to say, do they rhyme? And I get words like bone and done, who look like they rhyme and don't, and words like buy and tie, who don't look like they rhyme, which don't look like they rhyme, and do.
Right.
Okay. On this task, the kids were much inferior to the normal readers. So even though they knew the meaning of the word, they couldn't get its sound. So that they could read despite the fact that they couldn't pronounce the words. And our emphasis on this has led to many, many problems.
Yeah, and now going back to what you said, and you just said it again, reading out loud, being able, we assume that if a child struggled with reading out loud that they can't read. And what you're saying is that does not necessarily mean that they don't understand the words.
Correct. The thing that you might ask your children to do is read this paragraph to yourself. Do whatever you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And now summarize it in your own words. That's the way to tell whether they've understood or not.
Yeah.
There was a second part of that study with the semantic match, the meaning match, and the rhyme. This is a group of kids, a smaller group, who are reading disabled, who could do the rhyme task. They knew what the word sounded like, but they didn't know what it meant. These are the kids, and there is about 15% of the reading disabled kids fall into this category, are kids who will read fluently but have no idea what they just read.
Yeah,
and they're the ones that are in a lot of trouble because we think they can read.
Yeah.
And it takes a while for us to realize, hey, these kids can't read. They can
read
very well.
They can read they can read out loud, but they're not totally understanding what they're reading.
Absolutely.
They're not comprehending what they're reading.
I've come up with a very simple way to have these kids read. Let them read out loud into a tape recorder and then play it back to get the meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very simple way to turn a kid who is a non-reader of this particular type into a reader that is.
So they're reading out loud, but they're not
understanding.
Yeah.
So if you put it onto a tape recorder and then let them play it back, they understand it. The act of saying the words as if it turns off the mind. Give you a similar kind of study. We had kids learn words. They saw the words for a short period of time and then had to recall or recognize what those words are.
Yeah.
And half of the kids of a particular type, I don't want to get into the type there, but it's a very simple, well, maybe I will, but let me get this first, and then I'll tell you about this.
Okay.
Half of the kids were told when they're looking at the words to repeat them over and over and over again. And the other half were told to image the words in their head. So two different strategies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now we have type 1 kids. These kids did better when they imaged the words and when they repeated the words, they got worse than the control. And stop for a second. These are kids who verbal repetition interferes with their learning. Just like the kids who are reading out loud are not getting the concept in their head, kids who are memorizing things and saying them out loud, for about half the kids in your class, this will hurt your learning. It gets in the way of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And these are not learning disabled kids. These are straight classroom kids. Now, think about the way we teach spelling. Cat, C-A-T, cat. It's a verbal repetition approach. You do it again and again and again.
Until you memorize it.
Until you memorize it, and then you say, but this kid still can't spell. We went over it and over it and over it, and you still can't spell, and it frustrates parents. Well, one thing you might try is have the kid look at the word and then form an image of those letters in their head. Don't say anything, but just practice forming an image. And do it again and again. And when it comes time to spell the word, bring back the image and copy it. It is an approach to spelling that will help kids that do not learn by a verbal repetition approach.
Giving them a visual.
Letting them do the visual.
Right. Yeah.
Now, I said there's a very simple way of differentiating these students. It's called lateral eye movements. If you ask a person a question that they have to think about for a minute, their eyes will shift either to the left or to the right. There are other variations, but the right, left are the important ones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If their eyes shift to the right, it means that they tend to use left hemisphere strategies that deal with the left hemisphere, and the left hemisphere is the hemisphere that's responsible for us to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know how a person gets a stroke in the left hemisphere and speech is disrupted?
Yes.
Okay, same idea. So that to pronounce the words, to phonetically decode, you need this left hemisphere system. Kids whose eye movements go to the left are using mostly right hemisphere approaches. Now, in all of my work, 85% of the kids that we call learning disabled have eye movements that are going to the left. In other words, they prefer to use right hemisphere strategies. 85%.
Wow.
And those are the same 85% who couldn't do the rhyme task.
Now, what are the right hemisphere strategies?
Okay, let me start the way I got involved in this whole thing.
Okay.
Okay? I want you to image an animal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, how vivid was that image? In other words, if reality was 10... what would you call your image?
An 8.
An 8. Okay, so it's pretty close to reality.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have visual imagery. I cannot image anything inside my head. I mentioned that to a friend, and her reaction is, how do you think? Well, I think it's like talking to myself. For her, the thinking is like a series of pictures go floating through.
Yeah, I have photographic memory.
Okay, so that you operate that way, and so that the way you operate is basically a right hemisphere kind of approach. And strangely enough, you had difficulty with phonetic decoding and reading out loud. You see the consistency there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that this is, again, part of the whole package of, this is where my neuropsychology comes in. Right hemisphere oriented kids would be the ones that are good at spatial relations, have a good sense of direction, but have difficulty not so much speaking, but phonetic decoding and dealing with things from a repetition approach. In graduate school, I had students who are explained something, and they raised their hand for a question. And what they had, the question was not so much a question, but a restating of what I had just said in their own words. In other words, they are using the speaking as their strategy to learn. They are using a left hemisphere strategy.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And the learning disabled kids are the ones who have difficulty using left hemisphere strategies for the most part. And
which is what they teach.
Well,
what,
it was not
what is commonly taught to you.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but it had to be 20 years ago. There was a big movement that education is too left hemisphere oriented. And so what we did, we brought in creativity and art and everything there, which is right hemisphere. But what they were really saying is that we are using too many of these verbal strategies, these saying out loud strategies. It's too left hemisphere in that way. Let there be other kinds of strategies used. And this is, again, my whole emphasis on using different kinds of strategies, ones that are more appropriate for kids who have a right hemisphere kind of approach. Oh, about the imagery, let me ask you a very interesting question. When you imaged your animal, did you do it with your eyes open or closed?
I think my eyes were open.
Open, okay. Now, close your eyes and image an animal again. What happened?
It's not as clear.
Okay. You are not alone in that. About more than half the people naturally image with their eyes open. And if you tell them to close it, the image gets worse.
Yeah.
But how often do we say, okay, now close your eyes and imagine? Again, that's not the way people do it. But those are the kinds of things that we just assume are true until we look at them and say, hey, they're not true.
Yeah.
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 They're talking about people that have auditory learning styles. You've heard the term.
No.
I haven't, or not.
Repeat that again.
Auditory learning styles.
No.
They learn auditorily rather than visually.
Okay, yeah.
But there are two kinds of auditory. One kind is this talking to yourself. Another kind is not clear, but let me give you an example so you can see it. Did you ever have a song run through your head?
Mm-hmm.
You had it, okay. Who's doing the singing?
I am.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay. You asked that of a bunch of people, and half of them will say, it's the singer doing the singing.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing the singing, you're using a left hemisphere strategy. When you're hearing the singer, it's not clear what you're using, but it's different from when you're doing the singing. Can you hear the singer? I can't.
I can hear both. I'm kind of like singing with them. I can hear both. I can hear myself singing, and I can hear the actual song as if it's being played in my ear.
Okay, so that you can see the difference between them.
Yes.
One is an active auditory, and the other is more passive. I am not good in this passive auditory learning. For example, if I happen to see a program on TV or the movies that has both English spoken and subtitles, mm-hmm. I find myself drawn to reading the subtitles rather than listening. It's easier for me to learn and to understand from the printed word than from the spoken word. Just a quirk of me. Again, it's something that people need to be more aware of in their children. I guess I'm speaking a lot to the teachers and the parents, and to get them clear on that. I'm not good on languages, but I was down to the Dominican Republic once and pulled together enough Spanish to order my breakfast. And so I did. The waiter looked at me, smiled, shook his head, and said something to me. I had no idea what he said.
Mm-hmm.
What he did was repeat the order to me. The words that came out of my mouth did not go into my ear.
Mm.
To give you an idea between auditory active when I'm speaking and auditory passive when I'm listening. And for you, when a song runs through your head, you singing along with the music that you hear.
Yeah. Now, I want to ask, my youngest son has Down syndrome, and there's a lot of parents that have kids with special needs that listen to the show.
Okay.
And so I wanted to know, as far as Down syndrome, autism, or different specific disabilities, is there a technique that they use, or are we pretty much speaking on they use the left side to learn?
They're probably not using the left side to learn, if I had to make any guesses. If I were looking to see whether a child could read, I would clearly ask them to match words and pictures than to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would tell you precisely what they can do. Whether they can verbalize it or not, they know the meaning.
Yeah.
The communication boards are a good example of that. Rather than speaking, they're using those boards to make themselves understood.
Yeah.
We place such a high level of value and calling it intelligence, people who can speak, that
right.
People who can't are very likely to be called retarded or slow or learning disabled. Depends upon what the level is. So if you had a child with an IQ of, say, 100, an average child,
mm-hmm.
And they were left hemisphere oriented, they would be considered brighter than someone with the same intelligence who was right hemisphere oriented.
Just because they couldn't verbalize it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, because I noticed with Zion, I've been working with him on reading because, too, reading was one of my challenges. So I know that to explore different options on teaching him how to read. And so I did different things, tried different strategies with him, and getting him to connect to the word and in some forms, I teach them to memorize it too, but I also, and I'm going to use alphabets for an example, I'll scramble them up and have him, you know, tell me what they are because I didn't want him to memorize A through Z.
Right.
So I wanted him to be able to identify it when he see it and not because it's in a specific order. So, and I've been using that too with reading, and I wrote out these flashcards and certain words that I know that he knows.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the words, and I'll work on like four words at a time, and once he masters them, I add on four more words. But what I
know whether he masters them or not.
Because I will mix them up, and I'll put them in sentences. I do different things to see if he know, if he's just memorizing the word or if he recognizes it, and he'll say it. Or I'll sometimes I'll say, well, point to can, and he'll point to can, or point to it, and then we'll do like different. It's kind of repetition, but
mm-hmm.
I mix it up because I don't want him. Like I said, I don't want him to memorize how to spell a specific word. I want him to see it in his head.
Maybe ask him to see it in his head. You know, let him say specifically, see it in your head. No, work on him about imagery.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if I told you, you image some animal. Suppose I asked you to image the letters of that animal, of the letters of the word that make up that animal.
That would be a little harder. I could do it, but it would take a little more time. Then it would pop in my head.
Okay. Because while the picture is right hemisphere imagery, the letters are left hemisphere imagery. And that goes right along with what you were saying about how you have, we seem to have a right hemisphere orientation, how you think in pictures.
And two, I wanted to point out that, like we were saying, even though it was a challenge and it was hard for me to get to that point, even now I'm a grad student, and even with assignments that I'm doing, I'm a visual learner, and you know, I'll read over it, and I'll have to get a visual image of what I'm writing before I can, and I have to get a full understanding of it, or I can't even put it pencil to paper. But it's doable. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make.
You are using, put it this way, at this stage of the game, you are in charge of the strategy that you use. When you were in early grades, the teacher told you what strategy to use.
Mm-hmm.
And if it didn't work, then you weren't successful.
Yeah.
But now you have discarded what doesn't work and use what does work.
So, again, how can parents, some simple things that they can look for, or a simple strategy that they can use or to try tomorrow to see what strategies work.
Okay. First thing that I would do is to pay attention to the child's eye movements. Ask them questions they have to think about for a moment and check which way they look. If they look to their right, they tend to be using left hemisphere strategies. If their eyes tend to move to the left, they tend to be using right hemisphere strategies.
Which means
the right hemisphere strategies are the ones that do not involve speaking.
Okay.
So that a child who tends to use right hemisphere strategies, don't have them read out loud. Let them summarize it in their own words. Do not teach them spelling by cat, C-A-T, cat. Use something that does not involve speaking.
Mm.
You might want to try this with people. Remember these words. Dog, cat, tree, table, and chair. Okay? Can you give them back?
Dog, cat, tree, table, and chair.
Okay. Catch it to it. What went on inside your head?
imagined it. As you were speaking it, I was imagining it.
Okay. You get that to another person, and they would say, I repeated the words to myself. Mm. You get other people, and they say that they image the letters of the words. You get other people, and they would say they reheard the words.
Mm.
So that ask a person what strategy they normally do without any prompting at all. And then that's the one that you should be concentrating on.
Okay. Before we get ready to go, this is really helpful and enlightening to me and as a parent too, but in my own educational life. Throughout my own education, it's because I never fully understood why or could verbalize how I learn. So this was really enlightening to me. In what is your mission with Enable?
I am the CEO there.
Yeah, and what is your overall mission with well, tell us a little bit about what the company is and what the overall mission is.
It existed in was formed in 1995. And 1995, most people were not on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
This was actually founded by Robert Ambrose, who what he did was he would get donated computers, refurbish them, give them to people with disabilities, and teach them how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
My job on this was I was at St. John's there, and I was able to provide them internet access through my account through my accounts at St. John's. Now, to give you an idea of this, there were 12 dial-up lines into St. John's, and there was so little use for them that I could reserve two of those lines just for my disabled individuals.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1980s, no universities were really on the internet except those that were doing the Department of Defense kind of work. But people with disabilities were using the internet and or wasn't necessarily the internet back then, but computer networking because, as they say, it leveled the playing field. In K-12 education was on the internet at least 10 years before the universities got the idea that it's useful.
Yeah.
So they were the pioneers, but of course they're shut out now when they've expanded such that it becomes too expensive and the equipment gets harder and harder. But back to the Enabling Support Foundation. When I retired, I continued my work with the Enabling Support Foundation on the online portion of it. And Robert Ambrose moved up to Boston, and he was doing the computer donations and giving them out to people. My job was basically to create the online. This year, he retired. I've taken over, and the offline kind of stuff with the computers is no longer being done, and everything we do is virtual. It's online. We provide resources for parents, for teachers, for children, create projects so that teachers know how to use the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And, so basically what I'm doing is creating resources and services for education and persons with disability. And again, with the special emphasis on children with special needs.
And that address, again, is
www.enabling.org.
what do you want parents and teachers to understand about reading?
That reading means to get meaning from the printed word. It does not mean being able to say the word out loud. It does not mean being able to phonetically decode. Those are tools.
Uh-huh.
But meaning is number one. We spend years and years teaching kids to phonetically decode, and then we say, okay, now we're going to teach you speed reading. Forget about phonetic decoding and pay money to learn how not to do what we've been teaching you all these years.
Mm-hmm.
Why not start with speed reading?
And because they read faster.
They read faster.
They know that they're smart.
It cause problems. Actually, I find that speed reading is not good for me because I do phonetic decoding, and I naturally do that. And for me not to do that makes it a real effort. I don't understand as well when I don't do that.
Uh-huh.
So that I might have been called reading disabled if we stuck with a non-phonetic approach. So that the way we label kids can be dependent upon the way that the teaching strategies we use.
Yeah,
I'm a great believer in learning styles, that people learn in different ways. Two interesting comparisons about ethnic differences. I was teaching a class for gifted kids back in the early days of computers, and one of the things that I did was had them relax by playing a game. One of these games was called Snake. You had to move this Pong kind of character around the screen and get points by going through certain spots.
Mm-hmm.
As you played the game, the snake's tail got longer and longer. And you kept on playing until you either ran into your own tail or into the wall. And this African-American kid went on there, and he was a joy to watch as he moved from spot to spot and going on so quick, the way he had the reflexes, unbelievable just to watch him. Got a great high score.
Mm-hmm.
Then this Chinese kid went on, and what he did was he put the snake in the center and made slowly increasing concentric circles, again and again and again, and it was the dullest thing to watch, but he got the highest score.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're talking about two different strategies. What does a teacher do when they have one kid like that and another kid like that? Unbelievable. That kids use different strategies. And they are ethnically related. There's a learning styles test called a learning styles inventory. And it measures such things as when you study, do you like to do it alone or in a group? Do you like to eat when you study? Do you like music or other noise in the background? Do you like to sit formally at a desk or slouch around? Are you a morning person or an afternoon person?
Mm-hmm.
Simple kinds of questions like that to determine what's the best way for you to learn.
Why teachers don't do that? Why the school
inconvenient
system?
Yeah, it's inconvenient. Well, if I were to do it, suppose you took a teacher who was a morning person and gave her all the students who were morning students and took the hard tests, hard courses in the morning and the easier courses in the afternoon and reverse it for the other kids.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody would be happier, teachers and students.
Yeah.
Okay. Why would do some kids do very poorly until I get one particular teacher, and then they blossom.
Yeah.
There is something that the way that teacher teaches that makes all the difference.
So as a parent, what can we do? Because I do realize that certain teachers do have a certain effect on the kids. And I think, too, it has something to do with one teacher maybe more make it a little more fun. I know with Zion, with teaching him, I have to make it fun.
Sure.
With me, I have to be interested in what it is, or I'm not going to retain it. It has to be something I'm truly, truly interested in, or I've learned how to, of course, in college, every class is not going to be fun. So so I've learned how to make myself interested in what it is so I can retain it. So
what can parents do? If a child is doing their homework and the television is on, don't say turn it off, necessarily. Are they still doing their homework? One of my favorite stories is I was teaching a graduate seminar in neuropsychology, and one of my students was there doing a crossword puzzle. I stopped and asked her a question, and she answered the question perfectly.
Uh-huh.
So I said, go back to your puzzle.
Yeah.
Or why do parents say, sit up straight, how can you study like that? Maybe they can study like that. Maybe that's the way they need to be relaxed, by slouching and doing all those things that we say you shouldn't be doing. I think the most important thing for a parent to do is to understand that not every person does things in the same way. That if your child likes to do it this way, and that's not the way you would do it, then you're not him.
And they're retained. If that is working.
Right. If the proof of the pudding is in success. If they're successful, you don't care. The television on, it's driving you crazy, but they do their homework the way they should.
Yeah.
Get out of the room. Let the child study the way it's best for them. And we are grown up in such a 19th century mentality of this is the way it should be done. Well,
and if you see it's not working, then something as a parent, it's time to step in and find out what works for your child.
Absolutely.
It was an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Oh, it was fun. Great to talk. but as I said, I guess it's 11 years ago, and I always love to be in front of a class, and this gave me an opportunity to spout off and just talk about the things that really interested me. And I want to thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, thank you. And give that website again so people can get in contact with you and to check out what your services and stuff are.
Okay. It's www.enabling.org.
Thank you so
okay.
much.
And if you want to, my email is drz@enabling.org.
DRC?
DRZ, as in Dr. Robert Zenhouse.
Okay, DRZ. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Yvonne. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
You enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, no matter who pushes me, I know I'm not going to let you. I'm not gonna let you get me down. No, no, no.
Thank you for tuning in to the Yvonne Pierre Show. For more information about the show, how to be a guest, or to let us know what you think about today's show or previous shows, visit us at www.hyhradio.com. Remember to keep God first, know that you are blessed, and always be true to yourself. I love you. God loves you. Thank you for listening.
Believe in myself.